Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Chantilly Toyota. Let's ride together.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Fairfax Toyota. Let's ride together.
What's up, everybody? Redskins Talk is back after a brief transatlantic period of a dark period, I guess, for the podcast. JP Finley here. Rich Tandler is here with me. We are ready to talk about, there is a lot to catch up on, Tandler. How are you?
Doing great. And we did try to get one out from across the pond, but technology did not cooperate with us.
Yeah, we recorded another podcast, but maybe there's something in the podcast translation that doesn't allow them to be posted from London. And there's so much for us to talk about that I think we'll have to circle back to London, because I think we've got to start with everything that's happened in the time since. Certainly nothing bigger than the Trent Williams suspension.
Yes, which was, unfortunate, dumb, not bad for the, could not possibly come at a worse time for the Redskins. Could go on and on about, what's wrong with this whole thing. But it was just horrible timing by a guy who I thought, was really grown up and got it.
I agree. And, I don't know. The information that you get that comes out after something like this, between what actually gets reported and kind of the stuff you and I hear off to the side, can be really different. And, I don't even really try to get into much of the speculation surrounding a substance abuse issue, because who knows what's going on. I mean, that's the real truth of it. But just to what it does to the team, I mean, this is a serious blow. And a lot of folks want to say, hey, Ty Nsekhe's really good, they'll be okay. And I think in a bubble, that's true. I think the Skins are lucky to have a backup tackle as capable as Ty Nsekhe.
Well, let me interrupt you there for a sec. We've seen him be capable in a game, a spot game, a spot start. He played last 18 snaps of Morgan Moses against the Bengals, did fine. But we don't know, starting four games in a row is a different thing. Defensive coordinators can get some tape on you, figure out, where your weaknesses are, what to try to exploit. And so it could be a little bit of a different thing. So we don't know. We think he can be pretty good in a limited sample size, but it's an entirely different thing getting that job four games in a row.
I agree with that. And we have seen more than the 18 snaps, though. And Nsekhe started, you start one or two games last year, and he was pretty good then. Regardless of not making a wild proclamation about Ty Nsekhe, but as far as your third tackle on a team, he's pretty good. My larger concern, though, is what this does depth-wise to the Redskins, because Morgan Moses left the Bengals game with an ankle injury, and I saw him leaving afterwards, and there was definitely a boot on it. Now, all Jay Gruden has said is sprained ankle, day to day. We'll see how it goes when we get back. I've heard some stuff that could, or who knows what's going to happen with that. But that's also the second time this season Moses has hurt that ankle. If you remember, he left the Bills preseason game. And now we're talking about Vinston Painter being on the active roster, unless they're going to work out and sign a new tackle. It's just the moving parts of that offensive line, there's already some flux going on with Lichtensteiger being out. And, you know, Spencer Long has probably cemented himself as the starting center, but should there be another injury, there's just so much that could happen.
Yeah, you know, we don't know much about Painter at all. He's played a few scattered snaps here and there. And, you know, if you have to rely on him, it right tackle, you know, that's, again, for a short period of time, I think they'll be okay. Not as well off, but I think they'll be okay. You know, the other thing you have to look at is what if Konsecki gets nicked up? And, you know, we don't know what his durability is like, really. I mean, he's built like a, you know, a building. I think Chick Hernandez referred to him as the other day. He's huge. But, you know, if he gets injured, what happens? You know, do you then flip Morgan Moses over to the left side and put in Painter or whoever signed at right tackle? I think you almost have to do that. I think the thought of Vinston Painter protecting Kirk Cousins' blind side is kind of too scary to think about even.
And we're jumping ahead, right? We're assuming that maybe Moses' injury is worse than we thought, or that Ty Konsecki gets nicked up. But I think should something happen to either tackle, I think you see Brandon Scherff go outside to tackle, Spencer Long go to right guard, and John Sullivan's taking snaps for this team. I just think, you know, as good as Scherff's been for them as a guard, the drop off when you get down to a fourth string tackle at that point is what Vinston Painter would be. I think it'd be awfully tough to not. I mean, if you remember when they took Scherff, the plan was for him to be a tackle. Now he's proven to be a really good guard.
That plan lasted for like 10 minutes, by the way.
But no. But I think some of that was because they had a good option in Morgan Moses.
Right. Oh, I agree with that. But you know, I don't know. I think, you know, you look at what's happened when there have been offensive line injuries in the past, and I think the general answer, and again, not 100%, not always, has been whatever causes the least disruption to the line. I think that if they can, they would rather keep guys in their place. Now, you know, again, this is maybe desperate times call for desperate measures, and you do swing things around and put Scherff out there. But, you know, I think their inclination is to keep guys where they are and put in substitutes. You know, unless you get an in-game situation like when Trent had to go in and play left guard against the Giants, unless you get a situation, an emergency situation like that, their inclination is to stay. But we'll see. I'm not dismissing Scherff at tackle like you're saying whatsoever at all.
All right. So clearly this Trent Williams thing is a mess. It's going to be a big deal. I think it's only a big deal if they sustain an injury elsewhere on the line. Losing Trent obviously sucks, but they are a good team with good coaches that should be able to scheme around it for a few games. What do we think of Robert Kelly? Is that his job now?
No. I think, you know, there's two things when you're talking about who's the lead dog at running back. And, you know, in last year, we kind of saw, you know, Matt Jones and Alfred Morris started 16 games, but he wasn't necessarily the lead back in all of them. You know, I think sometimes he got, you know, he started, he was in there for that first snap, but he ended up taking fewer carries, and it was Matt Jones in the game in the more critical junctures of the game. And I think you could see that with Jones and Robert Kelly. I think you'll still see Matt Jones as the starter guy in there for the first snap.
Who
gets the ball, you know, could be, yes. Yeah, I don't think, you know, they have, you know, two more 100-yard games than does Robert Kelly. You know, obviously he has to show that he can hold on to the ball, but yeah, they're not gonna bury him on the bench. But the point is, you know, I think there will be games when Kelly, you look up in the fourth quarter and it's a 3-point, 4-point game either way, you look up and it'll be Kelly in there and not Matt Jones. So that way you don't have to, you know, you're not quote unquote demoting Matt Jones and whatever ego kind of things might be involved in that, and however that might bum him out, you know, maybe affect his performance. But, you know, in reality, in the games where it's called for, where he can be more effective, you have Kelly in there in the key carries.
Here's the biggest thing, and I feel like, I don't know if we talked about this or what, but the biggest thing I noticed with Robert Kelly is he does a better job of not having negative plays than Matt Jones. You can argue about getting downfield and seeing the field and pad level and whatever else you want to talk about. But there were times in that Bengals game especially that Kelly made somebody miss in the backfield, was able to get back to the line of scrimmage. In turn, what could have been a 2nd and 13 was just a 2nd and 10 or whatever the case. And you know, how many times have we heard Cousins say how tough it is for him and for the offense to play out of negative situations? I think that above all else is what Kelly does differently than Matt Jones. I think Matt Jones has more physical tools, but I think Kelly does better after contact and can elude tacklers better than Matt Jones. And I think that is what's going to keep him on the field with that first group.
I mean, I can pull those numbers up. I can't do it right now. I'll say I'm not going to necessarily take that as being the case. But, you know, the bottom line is, Rob Kelly, you take away that 145-yard run he had against Philadelphia. He's got a 5.0 per carry average, which, hey, wow, that's great. But for that 145-yard run on his other, I believe, 37 carries, he's averaging 3.8. Which is, you know, is that anything below 4? You know, 4 is maybe it's not quite the Mendoza line, but you know, 3.8 maybe is the Mendoza line for running backs. And if you're there or below, you know, you gotta get it going. So, you know,
all right,
Kelly,
but
I mean, I think he's good, but you know, I remain unconvinced. I'm convinced by Matt Jones too, but I'm saying this guy is not so good that you've got to make him the starter and give him most of the carries.
All right. Well, now that you've got me going on this, you take away the 57-yard run from Matt Jones to end the Eagles game, and his numbers probably drop below 4.
They do, and I calculated that before. I would tell you what it was. I don't think it drops below 4, but I'm sure because he has more carries, I don't think if it would ding it all that hard, wouldn't take 1.2 off of it. But yes, I would agree. You could take any running back's long run out and have it affect their numbers. But you know, we're talking about getting it done on a down to down, back to back, you know, back to back, down to down, play to play basis. You know, trying to keep the chains moving forward. I don't know if either one of them really has done that. And I think you keep on giving both of them the ball, keep on experimenting with both of them. Until one of them consistently, without long runs included, averages 4.5, 4.7, 4.8 per carry.
I mean, you want 4.7 a carry. I don't know that you're going to get it with this team, but I hear what you're saying. The only thing, I'm not arguing, like, people are, you know, there's some folks out there saying that Matt Jones maybe didn't even really have an injury, all that. I in no way think is this team done with Matt Jones. I think if they were done with him, he never would have come back in after the fumbles in Detroit. They brought him back in that game. He wasn't even benched for the whole game. So the Skins are not done with Matt Jones.
No. But I mean, the guy barely has. Let's see, he had 144 carries last year. He's got that, so he doesn't even have, you know, 275, 300 NFL carries yet. You know, you don't invest a third round pick in a guy and chuck him overboard. You know, when he has a rough patch after not that many carries. Now, it's like I said, fumbling, you know, we'll get him back on the bench again. There's no question about it. But, you know, he's been through it. Now he has a chance to correct it. Let's see what happens.
All right. So what's an average starting NFL running back get carries-wise? About 250 maybe, 230?
In a season, well, let's see. I mean, you know, it varies so much because obviously you have so many running back by committees.
Right.
But I would say that it's your lead back probably averages about 18 carries a game. So I don't have anything in front of me to do that math on.
Right. So, well, I'm looking at Matt Jones. So, and this is his career. So this is last year and so far this year. 243 carries, 950 yards, 3.9 yards per carry. So, to me, I kind of, I don't know. It might be premature.
That's basically a season. Can you live with that? Except now you didn't mention fumbles, which are, I believe, now at 6 lost fumbles.
Right.
Over those, you know, in that career. But that's about a season.
That's what I was thinking.
About a season's worth. And if you take away the fumbles, and maybe add a couple of points to the yardage, which you know has gone up this year. Add a few tenths, get him in the low fours. Did you have a pretty decent running back? Not a running back to where you'd say, okay, we're just gonna, you know, bench all other options and this is our guy. But a guy you want to figure out how best to use. You know, he is better than Kelly. Small sample size for Kelly, but he's better than Kelly catching passes out of the backfield. I think he's very underutilized in that aspect of it. And I know that the Redskins have an overwhelming number of people to target, so the running backs aren't necessarily going to get much. But I think he's better at that. So, you know, figure out, I think, you know, the coach, the task of the coaching staff in the remaining eight games of the season is, okay, this guy has his strengths, and let's not leave Chris Thompson out of it totally. You know, these three guys, they have their strengths. They can do some things well. Let's figure out how to best utilize the three of them to get our optimal offense, both running and passing.
So you brought up two things there. One is if you put aside the fumbles. I would argue that you absolutely cannot put aside the fumbles. But two was that you brought up that he is a good receiver. And I think Matt Jones is a really good receiver. If you add in his receiving stats, now, again, we're saying this is over his career, but considering his rookie year, he mostly spent it complimenting or backing up Alfred Morris. So he had 243 attempts so far in his career. He has 27 catches for 377 yards. Now, that's obviously a ton. That is boosted by that 80-yard catch and run he had against the Saints last season. But if you put those yardage totals together, take away the huge run against the Saints, and he's like a 1,200 total yards guy in a season. That, I think, people would be very happy with. But you can't, to me, you can't dismiss the fumbles. And I don't see the fumbles.
Yeah.
All right. We've spent, I don't know, 15 minutes on three players. So let's switch sides of the ball. Will Blackman, surgery on the thumb. Duke Iheanacho was very concussed. The Skins are getting thin at safety. Dante Whitner's playing every snap. This is the guy they signed a few weeks into the year. What do you think happens next week?
Do we see DeShazer Everett make his? I don't believe he's played a defensive snap this year. Maybe, you know, maybe something late in the game. I'm not sure. But, you know, we could see him. I mean, he's pretty much the next man up there. I think Blackman, I think although he was pretty, you know, he's pretty severe broken thumb. I saw him walking out of there. And that thumb just has some angles in it that are not natural at all. But, you know, you put a cast on that. I mean, look at surgery. I mean, Kerrigan last year had a broken hand before the bye, surgery, light cast to play. I mean, that's what you do in the NFL. He probably won't add to his career interception total while he's playing with a cast, but so, so be it, as long as he can knock passes down. So I think he'll be in there. With concussion, I mean, who knows?
Right.
Iheanacho, he could be sitting around partying and having a good time right now and be just fine. He could be out for weeks or a month or so. So, yeah, we will have to see. But he was, I definitely think, I don't know this, but just for as long as he was down for that, he was probably knocked out. That could take some time. But, I think he'd be very doubtful to play this Sunday if they had a game. But a week from Sunday, who knows? We'll see how it progresses. So, if they're both in, they're okay. It's funny, you say they've been thin at safety. That's been the case for about the last 10 years. I mean, that's a patchwork group they had back there. They lost D'Angelo Hall, converted corner. Will Blackman, converted corner. So it's just, it's not really a position of strength anyway. But I think that, Blackman has done a good job since he's been in there. I think if he's back, you can figure in. Whitner has been playing pretty well. But if you get Blackman back, I think you can figure out the rest from there.
Yeah, I wonder if they won't start looking at Sua Cravens in the secondary more. They've got to get him on the field. He makes plays when he's out there. But Compton and Mason Foster are playing well, so you don't necessarily want to take those guys off. I think I'm curious if that safety development starts moving a little faster for Sua. I talked to Will Blackman leaving London, and I think he was in some pain, but I think, to your point, those guys are really tough, man. And Will's been in the league a long time, and you don't get to that point without playing through some pretty, pretty awful stuff. So we'll see what happens there.
That would have you and me out of typing for a month.
It would.
They just get it patched up and rolling, and then when the season's over, they'll worry about whatever aches and pains. His thumb might be at an unnatural angle the rest of his life, but.
Right. Well, and I don't know if you've seen, especially the corners and the receivers. I mean, their fingers are mangled anyway, just from going different directions all the time,
Yeah.
What do we make of Josh Norman and the refs? I thought the hands to the face stuff got a little ridiculous. I'm not arguing the PI calls or any of that, but I don't know. It was, I made this comparison on radio with somebody, and I know that you're not the Terps basketball fan, I am, but his freshman year, Melo Trimble would drive to the lane, and every time he went up, he would flash his head back, so it looked like he got fouled, and he got every single call, and I think that started happening when AJ Green would flash his head, and the ref was just throwing a flag.
Yeah, but then, don't do that. It's two kind of separate issues here. Okay, what happened out there? Is that going to start happening every week? I don't think every receiver that Josh Norman lines up against is going to be savvy enough to be able to draw that flag as frequently as AJ Green did. For one thing, but the second thing is by calling out referee number 88 and saying you suck. Did he put a target on his back right between the two and the four? Is that there a big bullseye for officials to throw yellow flags at, saying you can't talk about us like that and get away with it? That's the other. That's the more, I guess, conspiratorial angle to the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see. All right, it's too early for us to start talking Vikings, I think. I will say that I think the Cowboys are going to run away with this division.
I
don't think the division is in play for the Skins.
No, but then on the other hand, you know, it's almost the reverse of last year when, you know, the division was kind of soft and, you know, the Redskins kind of had a pretty clear path and they could you know, kind of work their way to 9 wins and they actually would have won it. They could have won it if they only had 8 wins. If they lost that last game to Dallas, they still would have been an 8-8 division champ. So that's a pretty weak year in the division. And if you... But the rest of the NFC, as far as getting a wild card goes, is wide open. I mean, they're one of now they haven't had their bye yet. Obviously, that's coming this week. They played 8 games, where I think the majority of the teams have already had their bye and have played 7 games. But still, you know, everybody in second place in their, you know, that's not in first place in their division has 4 wins or fewer. So, you know, that puts them in decent shape for the wild card. They've got the game, you know, that tie, and the players hated it. They looked at it as a loss. But I tell you what, 9-6-1 could be something that gets you into the playoffs, whereas 9-7 might not. So they could end up being glad come January 1st when
right.
the season ends that they tied that game instead of losing it, even though right now they're saying it was bad as a loss. Well, not it felt like that, but really practically it was not. It was much better than a loss.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just especially it looks like perhaps the Vikings are, you know, looking elsewhere around the NFC. It looks like some teams that looked hot that first month. But, I mean, if this team can't score more and not... I don't know. The offense has to become explosive again for them to really matter in January. So I think that's the biggest thing to get figured out moving forward. A lot of, I don't want to say controversy, but there's been a lot of talk about Kirk Cousins' play at the halfway point and whether or not that is a strength or a weakness or if he is outperforming what other players could do. I think I saw you wrote something asking, is Kirk a compiler of stats or is he a guy that can win games?
Yep.
What was the answer?
Then tomorrow I'm going to look at, you know, what are their options? What can they do? You know, whether they could franchise him, they could sign him to a contract, they could let him walk, you know, kind of look at all the way all that works out. But, you know, I think, you know, this year, he's been a compiler, you know. Although I also said that if, you know, the last 6 games in a row, he's had his team in position to win. In Detroit, they won 4 in a row. He walked off the field in Detroit, 105 left to go with a 4-point lead, and then in London, he walked off the field with his kicker in position for a 34-yard field goal. You know, that's what his job is to win games. And, you know, I think the last two, the 0-1 and 1 stretch in the last two really can't be placed at his feet. So, you know, it's hard to figure out which way, you know, I guess that's why you play 16 games, because then you have a full body of work. And if they do make the playoffs, you know, see what he can do there. He wasn't horrible against Green Bay last year, but he certainly compared to the guy on the other side of the field who was having a pretty poor year and didn't have a great game, but still, obviously, in comparison, Aaron Rodgers came out looking much better, and Kirk looking like he still had a long ways to go. So, you know, there's some more evidence that needs to be gathered. I didn't necessarily answer the question one way or the other. I just kind of threw it out there, you know, for people to consider.
Yeah, and I don't know that there's a clear answer either. I think when you talk quarterbacks, you know, so we're doing our series on grades at the bye week, right? And
right.
You and I have oddly disagreed on both. We're pretty close, but I think you were. I was a little more critical of the O-line just because I don't think you can wait. You know, take out the Williams suspension. You thought you could. You were a little more critical of the wide receivers and tight ends than I was. I don't think Deshaun and Pierre's struggles are actually Deshaun and Pierre's fault. I think, and I also don't think Kirk's at fault. I think that's the system here, and this system isn't designed for big plays. Or if it is, they're not producing them. So, but it's tough to argue. The guy just threw for 450 yards. Like, I mean, that's a lot. All right, we're getting long here. What was your favorite part of London? Let's tell the folks a little bit about the trip.
I tell you, I had, you know, Wembley Stadium was great. You know, hanging out with you and Mitch and Mike and all the other guys was fun. But I went to Monday morning after you had taken off for St. Andrews.
Oh, you did go. Awesome.
Yeah, I went to the British War Museum. And, you know, Churchill's bunker down there. And it was a great experience seeing, you know, where these people had to live during the war and all that. So that was the one site I really got to see in depth. You've seen Big Ben was cool, Buckingham Palace, the statues, all that. That was great. But that's the one place I chose to go into and, you know, that I had time to go into in some depth. And I really thought it was a great experience.
So, all right, so you went to the British War Museum, but you didn't go to Abbey Road?
No, I did not go to Abbey Road. Could not. I had to make choices. So, that Abbey Road, I gave up the history to the pop culture I put aside and went to history instead.
The actual important events instead of pop culture.
Yeah.
I think that's certainly fair. For me, you know, from the actual work portion of our trip, Wembley was incredible. I mean, that atmosphere was just incredible. Outside of like a major playoff game, which I've attended a few, I've never been at a regular season NFL game with quite that energy, and not necessarily like this is a big football game energy, but just a wild event kind of energy. The moment I remember the most is, now outside of Dustin Hopkins missing the kick in OT, because that would have won the game, and that was obviously kind of seismic for the actual football result. But do you remember in the third quarter when they started playing Thriller in the stands and everybody in that place started dancing and singing along?
Yeah.
That was just something that you never get in an NFL game.
No.
It was wild. Playing St. Andrews was certainly ridiculous. And getting to travel outside of London a bit and see the rest of the country was tremendous. All right, when are you going to talk to me again? Next week we're back on our regular schedule. We will have a podcast Monday. We'll do a full-fledged Vikings preview on Wednesday, and then Friday, hopefully, we'll get a player to talk with us and wrap it up. What are you going to do this weekend without a football game to attend?
Oh, I'll probably watch other football games, catch up on. I miss them. Yeah, between this and I went to New York, a couple other Saturdays have just been consumed by other things. I've been having fun, of course, which is great, but I have not had a good. Like just sit down and watch college football Saturday in a while. And then, of course, the NFL Reds on Sunday. So, you know, I know that sounds like I don't have a life, and maybe I don't, but that's my weekend.
What do we got this weekend? LSU, Alabama, right?
Yeah.
All right.
And, the Hokies are at Duke. I'll be keeping an eye on that. And, you know, whatever is on, I will choose to be entertained by it.
See, what's tricky... All right, we're at different stages of our life because I was gone, you know, out of the country. I kind of owe my wife some, hey, you get to relax and I'll watch the baby time. So I doubt I will get to just chill and watch football all weekend, but I will certainly work to get as much as I can.
Okay. That's a worthy goal.
It's a worthy goal. I'm gonna focus on getting to watch LSU Alabama and then some quality. See, for me, I won't be able to go red zone all day Sunday, but if I can time it so I get like 3 o'clock to maybe 4:30, get to watch the end of the 1 o'clocks, and then, you know, time it again that, all right, I'm gonna sit down at like 6:30, get to watch the end of the 4 o'clocks, I'd be pretty happy with that.
There you go. That works.
Yo, speaking of, did you watch the World Series?
Yes.
I didn't get to watch any of it.
Oh, that's because you were you in customs?
Yeah, I was still trying to get into the damn country.
It was a heck of a game. What can you say? I was kind of rooting for Cleveland, just to kind of be contrary. I didn't, I don't really have a horse in the race.
Yeah.
You can't be too upset to see, the Cubs in their 108-year drought. And, they certainly do have their, you hear about long-suffering fans and, the Cowboys have won a Super Bowl in 21 years. Oh, my God.
Cubs are legit awful. Long-suffering.
But then, yes, they are legit long-suffering. So it was, that was good to see.
All right. We're going to wrap up. Everybody, check out Tanler and I are doing a series of Redskins grades at the bye week. We have already done O-line, receivers, tight ends, but we're going to have D-backs, D-line, quarterbacks, specialists. Anything I'm forgetting, Rich?
Defensive backs, linebackers.
Linebackers. That's an important position.
Yes.
Tanler, tell everybody your Twitter handle.
It is Rich_Tanler, CSN.
Okay, and mine is @JPFinley_CSN. Rich, we're going to wrap. Thank you, and you know what's weird is I won't see you Sunday.
No, we'll see Monday, I think, is when we assemble next and in here in Ashburn.
Yep, I'll see you Monday. All right, take care.
I owe you a beer.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram. Let's ride together.
What Makes You Smile is brought to you by Dominion National. For anyone that needs dental and vision benefits, I have a one-stop shop for you. TeethKeeperSave.com. TeethKeeperSave.com offers dental and vision benefits for everyone with plans starting under $7 a month. Don't have benefits through your employer? Are you self-employed and need dental and vision benefits? TeethKeeperSave.com has various plans for individuals to choose from. Visit TeethKeeperSave.com today and enroll in minutes.